Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Tuesday's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast, the first Terrace podcast, or the first proper Terrace podcast of 2023. My name's Craig Anderson and I'm joined by Amy Canavan.
Hi Craig, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And Tom Watt,
Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to you both.
It is only the 3rd of January, so I think it's acceptable to say Happy
New
Year.
When does it end? When does it end? I get nervous because we used to do it at school, so that was it. And then, like, well, uni, we never went back to uni till like February, so that didn't really count. But I like, it's a socially awkward thing, I think. I don't know when do I stop saying it.
It's weird. I had quite a low key New Year, so I was at the football yesterday, and a couple of people said, "You know, Happy New Year," and I almost forgot it was New Year. So it was interesting.
Day two's fine.
Yeah, day three also fine. Obviously, you've got about a week.
I think you've got 10 days unless there are people that you've not seen in a really long time who you've stayed in touch with. I think you're allowed, like, statute of limitations.
March.
Ended. You're allowed into March. Yeah, after Chinese New Year, then I think we're in all sorts of New Year issues. Then, but yeah, I think generally this week, next week, absolutely fine.
So, Tom, I'll ask you first. How was your festive break? How did you enjoy it? I mean, football aside for you, Tom.
Well, football aside, yeah, we'll come on to that. No, good. I haven't travelled too far. I also have, I'm willing to argue with anyone that I have the worst birthday in the world on the 30th of December because everyone's kind of partied out and wants to hold off until the 31st. But it was good. It was good. And this year was good. And as you get older and don't want to hit it quite so hard, you can have something quite civilized on your birthday. So yeah, Christmas was good with family and got a couple of times out with friends. Good birthday. Santa was good to me. And New Year's been good. Just ready to go back to work now.
What about you, Amy?
I had an absolutely terrific time. I didn't think that I would, because I thought, like, I was working quite a lot and this is like my first proper Christmas, like, not of uni and that. So I was a bit concerned because we're working so much. But oh, I've had an absolute blast with a great New Year in particular. Absolutely still hungover. Should not have went to work yesterday. But it was brilliant. I done Bongo's Bingo for Christmas, for New Year's Eve, sorry. I've done it a few times, and if you've not, I highly recommend it. It's just like, it's just drunk bingo and it's tremendous. I advocate it all the time, and I've already booked up St. Patrick's weekend, so cannot wait.
Oh yeah, now, so your youth is showing there, Amy, because
absolutely.
My New Year was the two of us sitting on the couch with a two-year-old sleeping upstairs, so yeah, you're kind of restricted at that point.
Peaceful though.
It was nice, but funnily enough, you don't have lots of people volunteering to babysit on Hogmanay. So yeah, but no, it was fine. But I was saying to Tom just before we came on that I had four trips to Ayrshire in total over the Christmas and New Year period. So you can imagine I'm quite glad we've got a few. I think Kelly's Kelly's mostly playing in Glasgow for the next little while, and that suits me fine. Because it's two for the football and two for family, and I enjoyed three of the four. And we'll talk about the fourth one. We'll talk about the fourth one soon. And that does bring us to the football. Obviously, the second of January, the New Year matches. Obviously, the big derby match that everyone wants to talk about. The kind of more dominant team in the city, trying to pull away further from the little team, and they managed it. It was Heart of Midlothian 3, Hibernian 0. So I didn't really expect any other result other than the fact that it was an Edinburgh derby, and you never quite know, but Hibs just seem like they're in a bit of a mess at the moment.
They are one of the worst clubs on a run right now. It is remarkable. They do not play good football at all. I'm totally with you, Craig, that I didn't see anything other than a resounding Hearts victory. They just cannot play well. You know, it's their forward line in particular. I think it speaks volumes when Eli Ewan's probably their most creative attacking outlet and looks the most likely to score, because I think that's a real worry. I think he's one of the worst players I've seen in front of goal. And he probably looked like their best sort of chance of scoring against Hearts. But they're just, even with their mountain of injuries, Hearts, and which just seems to, just when it seems to almost lessen the load, then it just gets chucked on again. They're still streets and streets ahead, and I think it'll take a long time until Hibs can sort of get anywhere near back to being within them, because you know Hearts didn't even need to play exceptional against Hibs, you know, and I don't think they were, but the scoreline speaks volumes. Hibs are in deep trouble.
I think the most damning thing about it for me is that Lee Johnson after the game has, you know, suggested, you know, they've still got like lots of work to do in the January window. That five of the players that started are his signings. They signed 16 players in the summer, like, and yeah, there's injuries, and but five of the players that started were his signings. Aidan McGeady came off the bench. It was one of his signings, at least nominally one of his signings, and they look a lot worse than they did. They look a lot worse than they did a year ago, and they looked in a mess a year ago. And it doesn't look like there's going to be an easy fix. Like Paul Hanlon looks like he's running out of puff. They can't keep relying on Stevenson. Ryan Portis is off, whether that's next month or at the end of the season. And it looks like what they've got left just is like being held together with bits of string. The opening goal was comical, like just I actually have, you know, in the predictor I had that it would be a draw, because the one thing as Hearts have been the more dominant club largely over the last decade or so, the one thing Hibs have always been able to do is, or the one thing the Edinburgh Derby has always managed to serve up, is absolute tedium. So normally they like kind of like, in an Edinburgh derby, if it's televised especially, it's a
horrendous.
Horrendous. You know, for to all intents and purposes, there should be great stories, there should be pitched battles and all, and there never is, and it's usually awful. So I thought, you know, the one thing that they've always had going for them is, even when it's been a bad run, is being able to kill the game. But if you start like this, and what on earth William Fish is trying to do twice, it's just baffling. It's a terrible attempt at clearance, and then a terrible attempt at shepherding the ball out for a goal kick when, you know, it's a good 10 yards for the ball's out, and there are two players closing him down, and it didn't get much better after that.
I just think there's that something in my head that's always like, never make two errors. If you make a mistake and you get away with it, just fuck the ball up the park. Don't give yourself the opportunity, because they do it, like errors breed errors. I think that's pretty common in football. And when you've got away with the kind of slackness to begin with, anywhere, stick it for a throw-in, whatever you have to do, because you're just creating an opportunity. And especially when it's Cammy Devlin who's chasing you down, the most terrier, a man so terrier-like he was able to essentially steal a football shirt off Lionel Messi. That is not the player that you want to be kind of taking chances with in that situation. But it's funny because there's always that sense of foreboding on sports scene when you watch the highlights of a game where you know that a goal's coming because it almost like the clip starts a little bit further back than it does for a shot. They always give you an extra 5 seconds of build up. So you've kind of got that sense because the ball's in a nowhere position and you're like, hold on, I know this game's 3-0. How on earth are Hearts scoring from here? And it's Cadden passes it back to Fish. I don't really want to put too much blame on Cadden because it's not exactly an inspiring pass, but Fish has got plenty of options and he just kind of keeps making it worse and worse for himself. And then David Marshall doesn't cover himself in glory either with the ball across. And then that sets the scene for the game, I would say.
It's just a downward spiral from there, isn't it? You know, and I think it was probably a downward spiral when you saw Will Fish and Harry McCurdy sort of named in the side. It was sort of like, oh, what is going on here? Why now? Sort of thing for them both, really. And I think even pre-match, the fact that Lee Johnson came out and said that, he certainly said it to the BBC, that was his line, that Harry McCurdy's either going to score a goal or is either going to score the winner or get sent off. Like, what sort of message are you sending pre-match here, sir? It's a little bit of a comedy right now, isn't it? And if, like, yes, the 3-0 victory is absolutely tremendous if you're a Hearts fan, but I think just, I've been there with Rangers, it's just tremendous to laugh at your dreadful opposition, you know, like, because it's just that I think there's a real laughing stock element that just seems to keep trudging on the more and more that Hibs play. Even they don't even need to play because Lee Johnson's always in the press. The man has always got a headline coming out. So, it's non-stop.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And Hearts are very quietly building up a very long unbeaten run against Hibs. I think that's 8 matches now, and they obviously play each other in a few weeks in the Cup as well. Suddenly, you know, I think it's the famous 21 or however many in a row that they had in the 90s. You're like, you're creeping towards that territory, like, before you know it. And yeah, the third goal, I mean, we'll talk about the second one as well, but the third goal kind of sums it up as well, because it's like you're talking about Hanlon and Stevenson creaking with age and none more so than in that kind of moment where David Marshall's like almost staying on his line, because David Marshall just thinks, so there's no danger here.
There's two
defenders in front of him. It's fine. He's running right down the middle of the
pitch. With a combined age of 190.
Yeah. and you're just thinking, right, and then all of a sudden Humphreys emerges with the ball and Marshall is like still like 2 yards from his line. So it's like the opposite of narrowing the angle. It's like widening the angle as much as possible. It's like just pick a part of the goal to stick it into.
It's like there's like a Bermuda Triangle of like a lack of pace. Like they're like operating at a completely different speed, while Humphreys is on like 2.5 times pace. It's wild.
And that second goal is it's the type of thing we've got to, not that the correct decisions were made in both cases, but it's two like absolute fiascos of VAR where it's like decisions are like so unclear as to what's happening, because I know we had people who were at the game on our WhatsApp kind of unsure about why a penalty had been given and not the goal. Yeah, I mean, yes, it's a handball from Bashiri, very clearly. I don't actually know why he wasn't sent off. I can only assume that the deflection from Hanlon might have been taking the ball wide, because otherwise it looks like a straight red as well. But it's that, like, the fact that Sibic scores, and it's two examples of players scoring goals and then them not being given but still getting penalties, and it's like, it's just weird all round. But even at that was like a bit of, it kind of summed up Hibs defending, where the ball's just pinballing about their box again.
It's a running theme as well, though, like that, the whole situation, and it's a running theme throughout the games yesterday, that was, what did they end up saying? It's over 6 minutes, isn't it, the decision? And yes, the right decision eventually was, like, came to. But there has to be a better way of communicating that to the fans, to the media as well, I think, because, you know, you do have, you might hate that you get coming in. I've been in the press box with VR, and you're exactly like a fan there, and they're shouting up to you because they think that you're going to have some sort of insight, and you don't. Like, it's just as horrible, and it's a guessing game, and it all happens oh so quickly. But for 6.5 minutes, like, I don't know, somebody go and find the microphone and just shout over the tannoy, look, this is what's happening. Because as you say, Craig, like, within the group chat, like, there's so many things there, and it's a special circumstance, because you're like, right, there has been a goal, so why is that not just happening? You know, it's not, you're like, oh, we're almost getting punished for that. So it's a confusing one. And I watched the verdict, and Stuart Dougal sort of said that is probably the perfect scenario for any budding referee to watch, because it does have absolutely everything in it. But I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, or if it is, then it has to be communicated better, because, like, no decision should be taking 6.5 minutes to get made, surely.
I think there's another layer to it as well, where, like, there's got to be an education job as to why things are given, so that fans can understand what's, and I mean, we've had VAR introduced, and we've had a raft of new little tweaks to the rules, and fairly significant tweaks to the rules. So, you know, you could have understood the handball rules for the best part of 20 years, and they've changed, whether or not for the better or not. But it's not, we don't have enough live versions of what's happening to understand what it is that's happening. And this wasn't even the most confusing VAR decision of the weekend.
Absolutely.
There was all things going on. There's one that we will come on to that I'm still not entirely sure why there was another VAR intervention. But yeah, I don't want to focus too much on the VAR side of things. It's more on the rules. And as a fan, you can't have 6 minutes of not knowing
why it's
not being given. Like, if you get 6 minutes of injury time, that's a huge amount of injury time in a normal amount of game. To sit around waiting, just figuring out what the referee has to analyse effectively three different phases of play is madness.
We can talk about all that, but I still don't have a slightest clue what Kevin Clancy gave either, because he gave a free kick to Hibs. So there's that element as well. But yeah, moving on from that, is there anything to add on this game? I think Hibs are in deep bother at the moment. I think their January business, they can sit down and say, oh yeah, well, we need to get a window. But as you said, Tom, they signed 15 players or 16 players in the summer, and it made their squad worse. So maybe another 15 is not what they need.
They're obviously sticking. Yeah, on you go, Tom.
I think, just very, very briefly to pick up on that, I think the biggest problem they've got is that Lee Johnson's absolutely right. They do need bodies. But if you were to ask 100 Hibs fans what position they needed most, you would get all sorts of different positions. They desperately need, like, with the exception of a goalkeeper, they need reinforcements at the back, even without Ryan Portis going out. That midfield needs major surgery. It's desperately one dimensional. And without Martin Boyle, the attacks in all sorts of bother. There isn't the width that there should have been. I mean, with the exception of Cadden and Marshall, I think, and like Joe Newell, if they're playing okay, has had some decent games. I don't think they're... I think the one kind thing you could say is, at the moment, if Hibs wanted to go out into the transfer market, they could quite easily find upgrades for most of the squad. But I'm not sure Lee Johnson knows how he wants to play. I'm not sure he knows what formation he wants to play. I'm not sure he knows how to use the players he's got at his disposal. So I'm not quite sure how he's going to go out and identify the ones that are clearly needed without going and doing another huge shopping spree and bringing in another 6 or 7.
I just want to... We have to just go and work out who's available at Rainbow FC, because that's... Right, we will move on to the other big derby match of the weekend in Glasgow. This time, Rangers 2, Celtic 2. A very entertaining match, I would say, on Saturday. Or I keep saying Saturday, wasn't it? It was Monday lunchtime. I watched it on the train down to our game. And yeah, I thought probably in balance, the correct result in terms of the both teams had about 45 minutes whether they were the better team, but it was an interesting way that I arrived there, and I think Rangers will be bitterly disappointed that they didn't cling on. They kind of, basically, the substitutions changed the game in that Rangers got worse because they don't have a very good squad, and Celtic were able to bring on a couple of guys that really impacted and changed the game, and fundamentally, that's why Celtic are 9 points clear at the top, and it's why they will probably win the league. So, yeah, what did you make of it, Amy?
Yeah, I think it's I think you're spot on. I think Rangers have to be bitterly disappointed. I certainly would be. I think it was a great point for Celtic to get, given the performance. I don't think Celtic were anywhere near their best. It was one of the very few times domestically that I feel that an Ange Postecoglou side sort of looked a little bit confused. I felt there were spells, especially those 6-7 minutes after the half time. That was just a totally lost Celtic side, and that's very rare. Europe, absolutely, see that all the time. But on the domestic front, that's pretty rare. It's interesting you say that about substitutions, but I think Greg Taylor going off was massive. That's, you know, true, Josip Juranovic was absolutely atrocious. And I was advocating for him to start. I was a bit surprised that Alistair Johnston started instead, but you can understand why. Because he looked like a rabbit in headlights, really. So he made Sakala look almost like a Ballon d'Or winner, which he certainly is not. But yeah, for Celtic to be able to come away with a point, I think speaks volumes of just sort of the character and the mentality that they can play nowhere near their best and still come away from Ibrox with a point. Because Rangers, yeah, for large spells, probably from about 35th minute up until until the end of the game, really, when Celtic scored. It was, I don't think you could necessarily think that it was coming. I think there was a few odd selections that you do have a bad on the bench. I'd had him in from the off, and absolutely being able to call on them is great. But not starting Jota, I wouldn't mind him starting Giakoumakis either, because I think in these sort of games he thrives, bullying defenders. But no, all in all, it's a tremendous point to take. I'd have taken a point beforehand, absolutely, because I think Rangers needed a win, because 9 points is a huge gap, especially when, you know, okay, maybe yesterday aside, Celtic are pretty relentless anywhere else, trying to being able to carve out a win, even when they're not at any sort of scintillating best, as Tom will know.
Thanks for that.
I thought there were shades after halftime, especially of the game at Tynecastle for Celtic, where Hearts just ran around and just harried and pressed everything. And Rangers did the same. The running from Rangers was really impressive. And even Morelos, for the size of him, was quite heavily involved in that press. Because, I mean, he is badly out of shape, but I thought he had a good game. Two major a really bad pass for the opening goal and a terrible miss aside, the two things you don't want him to do. But I thought he had a good game, and I thought, like, Sakala's running, you're right about Juranovic, he's played left back before, but you'd have thought it was the first time he'd ever been asked to play the position. I know Taylor's always going to be a hard replacement in that side. It wasn't helped. I think you see the importance of the fullbacks in that Postecoglou team, because I think Johnston, for me, I don't want to judge him too harshly, but he didn't look up to that game. I mean, and fair enough, it's your debut, and you're coming from a league where there's a lot of running about, certainly, but there's not the same pressure on any football match in MLS, because it's like half the teams get into the playoffs. It's like there's almost no consequences to any individual game of football in that league. And I'm not going to judge him, but he kind of had those vibes of a guy who was kind of... My thought when Celtic signed him was, he'd have been a good signing for Hearts. And we'll wait and see whether that's how it turns out. But you saw how important the fullbacks can be to Celtic, because it didn't really offer anything down the flanks. It left the wingers kind of not being able to impact the game as much, because they were kind of having to cover the wide areas. And all of that was, because when the game started, you thought of Celtic are just going to steamroller Rangers here. The way obviously they go 1-0 up and they've done it so often. And then it wasn't to me until Aaron Moy, not a player I'm a massive fan of, but when he came on, I thought he really controlled the remainder of the game, and it wasn't surprising he was heavily involved in the in equaliser.
I thought he was really impressive when he came on, and he was obviously very impressive against Hibs as well. But I think you make a good point about Johnston, and almost that, because I'll be honest, yes, he was a shock, but so too was Forrest being named in the starting lineup. But I think that was almost right. If you're starting Johnston, you've got to have the experience, the Forrest almost. And he is more defensively minded than any other winger, basically because he's not as quick getting forward now. So he's always going to sort of be liaising around. But Forrest has a ridiculously poor record against Rangers personally. I think he's got 2 goals and they only came in the last... he certainly scored under Neil Lennon, and I think he scored under Brendan Rodgers in the 5-0 against Graham Murty. I think that was his first goal, the policeman hat on Lustig's head. But other than that, he's played, you know, 25 games or something against Rangers and only 2 goals. He is... And at Ibrox, he's atrocious. It's almost just like he just can't handle it. I think that was a weird one, but it almost had to be, like, if you're starting Johnston, the caveat is that you have to start Forrest as well. But it just sort of slowed play down a bit. Matt O'Reilly looked really ineffective as well, and I felt he was he's been quite ineffective probably since we came back from the break, which is a little bit worrying. It's almost, I was saying this to my dad earlier, I think he's remarkably not scored yet for Celtic this season, and I think that's almost like playing in his mind. He's, you know, he's still, I don't know, he's something, he's certainly in the top 5 assists in the league, but he's not scored himself, and it's almost that is like ticking away and playing on him a little bit. But he didn't look anything like what he can produce. And as you say, when Aaron Moy came on and just sort of implemented this control, that and even that sort of attacking source that you wouldn't really sort of associate with him. But I think other than Juranovic, yeah, the substitutions did make a big difference, and Celtic squad is still largely ridiculously better than anyone else's in the division. So I think it's more credit to Rangers that they did manage to tail Celtic back for so long, but I think it has to overridingly be disappointment that we weren't able to see it out.
I think the biggest difference between the two teams is that Celtic know how to control a game and know what, and were, even when they went behind, and there was that kind of 20 minute period where they looked rattled. As soon as Rangers went ahead, they didn't know what to do next. So, like, and I think that's, although Beale's had a good start in terms of the amount of, in terms of the results that he's had, they've been kind of feeling their way into games. And you know that they're always going to have this, they've always got talent. They've got this like blitzkrieg ability that they can go and smash teams. But to be able to manage a game over 90 minutes and win comfortably 1-0 just because there's no other, you know, because there's not another chance that comes along. And I think that's been the difference between the two teams so far this season, because if you can't manage a game, you're always going to drop points late on. You're going to be comfortable throughout a game and then suddenly discover that you've lost. Celtic were ahead, and for most of the first half were pretty comfortable. Rangers came out all guns blazing, and we know they've got that in them. And I think it's always possible that you're going to have those kind of games and those kind of momentum shifts in it. But from the point that they decided, right, we're going to have to protect this, and threw on subs, it almost surrendered the momentum that they had and the fright that Celtic had got, because they really did look like they'd had a fright. And like you mentioned, Sakala, it's probably the, other than the games he has against Motherwell, where he always seems to be unbelievably good, it was the best game or the best 20-minute period I've ever seen him have in a Ranger shirt. But at the point that straight after the goal, when it's like, right, I think we need to consolidate this now, and, you know, took on Ryan Jack, took off Morelos, took off Tillman later on, and certainly Jack was completely at fault for the equalising goal. And I mean, it wasn't like there was a sustained period of Celtic pressure in the lead up to the goal, but you could see the Rangers defence retreating a bit more, there was less space, and it wasn't quite coming, but you could feel there was definitely a mistake left in the game. So I think that's kind of the big difference, and I think that's why Celtic will win the league, you know, 9 points and, what, 20 goals better off. It's that Celtic will play badly and win a bunch of games this season by a goal. I think there's still plenty of games this season where Rangers will play really well and drop points, and that's the difference between the two teams this season.
Anything else on this?
No, I don't want to talk about VR.
We'll move on then. We'll move on then. Not a lot of goals left to talk about, but we will move on to the only other one that had more than one, which was Livingston 1, Motherwell 1. Talking of VAR.
Oh, God.
And was this a game you were covering, Amy, at the weekend?
Yeah.
Or I keep saying the weekend. It wasn't the weekend. It was Monday. Again, one of those where, like, fair enough, the decision is absolutely correct with them. Well, the decision to give the penalty is correct, I'm not sure, but the decision afterwards is correct. But the fact that, again, you're working the game and basically everyone, it sounded like everyone in the press room was basically having to have a big conversation to try and work out what on earth had happened, is an issue with communication again. And ultimately, don't let that take away from how terrible both of Nicky Devlin's penalties were.
They were atrocious penalties, absolutely. And I just think that you're spot on. I don't personally think, and the initial penalty, I feel it's incredibly harsh on Nicky Lamy. And if we didn't have that, then we could have avoided all of this drama that unfolded for the next 10 minutes of just shouting, what the fuck is happening here? Because it's incredible. And, you know, I get it. Like, as a fan, you're so right to be annoyed at, you know, the radio or whatever it is, but nobody has a clue. And, like, maybe that's not wise to say that, but it's not that you don't have a clue because you don't understand the rules. You don't know what there were so many things, because at first we thought it was encroachment. That's initially what we thought. So I'm in the office, I'm listening to Stephen Craigan as well. So you're having to take sort of a pinch from him and thinking, right, so he's there, but as he said, and, you know, I've been both sides. I've been in the press box, sending it back to the office, and been in the office sitting going, I don't know what's happening here. Because it's just all, it's that lack of communication. So there was encroachment. Then somebody thought, okay, maybe Liam Kelly is off his line. But then there was obviously the handball incident sort of bundling in as well, but you were like, right, well, if Liam Kelly's off his line, that negates really the handball in sort of scenario, and I think we ended up going with encroachment because that's the last thing that we got told. But then I, like, looking at it, because the issue is when you get the VR thing through, like on the screen, you can see both. So you can see the encroachment and you can also see Liam Kelly off his line, but you're not getting told what is getting looked at. You're just seeing that scenario, that VAR angle. So that's obviously, the handball was absolutely not a part of it. So it's more just as you see it, and we looked at it hundreds and hundreds of times. And I think ultimately, because there's both, there is encroachment and Liam Kelly is off his line, so both are, like, reasons for a retake, so it's absolutely fine. But yeah, again, it's just the confusion around it. In fairness, it was a little bit quicker than the Hearts decision at getting made to, but I think then it's more just the overriding confusion about how the referee and VR sort of came to that decision. And it would be nice, I don't know, you know, it's all going to come down to money as well, but, you know, some people get confused. Obviously, it runs from Clydesdale House, so it's like, you know what I mean, it's not PQ. I don't know if a line could be, like, fed through or something, but it would make all parties a lot happier, I think, if there was just a greater line of communication throughout.
It was something that came up. So Joel and I went and visited the facility, and it was something that was asked, and basically what the SFL, what the Referees Association basically said was the SPFL would need to fund someone to be the,
like, the communicator, the voice. Yeah,
the voice,
yeah,
because
be the voice,
they're, they're all, obviously, the referees are all sitting there actually making the decisions, so there needs to be a
stick a mic up, like, fuck the room.
That'd be interesting. But
do we have a celebrity? Susan Coleman is special the voice.
Oh, amazing. Oh, that would be tremendous. Michelle McManus.
Yes.
But it's interesting you say that, Amy, because I still thought the reason it was given, which points to everything, I still thought the reason it was given was because it did come off Devlin's arm on the way in. And I thought that's like, you can't score a goal with your arm. So,
but if Kelly's off his line beforehand, then...
I think it's like in that order. It's like the Kelly's off his line, but if Devlin scores a legal goal, it's a goal. But because his goal's also not legal, it's like you go back to the first incident. I don't know. That was my take. But anyway, I think that points to what's the whole problem. Because it was similar to the one Rangers v Napoli in the Champions League, where the Napoli player scores the rebound, and if he hadn't been encroaching, it's a goal. But because he was the one encroaching, but for me, I could be wrong, but I feel like because it was Devlin who got the rebound himself, the encroachment wouldn't matter as much. But I don't know. That's the problem. I don't know.
I've read two match reports on this, and both have slightly different versions of events. One has apparent encroachment, and one has clearly for handball. I have no idea, and I think that's the problem. It's not the decision. It's the lack of clarity. So the irony of this is we've got video evidence that we can go back to, that we can slow down, but we can't actually offer any clarity. So we offer less clarity on why the decision's being made than if it was just being made in real time.
What I thought is you look at the goal, Devlin scores, but then when you look at the goal that Devlin scores, it has come off his arm. I don't like that rule because it's clearly not deliberate in any way from Devlin.
Absolutely not. If we're talking about closeness as well, like that's obviously, I don't want to touch on it, but the Goldson one is obviously protecting his face, so they say, and it's not out with his natural body shape, so he's keeping everything narrow. So is Devlin. You know, Devlin's not flung an arm out to throw it into the net, and it's so close.
But that's the rule now is specifically for a goal. If it hits your arm and goes in, it's not a goal. Can't be given, which I think's a bad rule, but it is the rule. And so I thought then they went, well, okay, the decision should be a free kick to Motherwell, but then because Kelly was off his line before that, it's like, well, we go back to a penalty. But anyway, the reason it's a big incident or a big moment in the game, but it would have been a bigger moment in the game had Livingston not scored, maybe not that long after it. And that's a really nice goal from Morgan Boyce, who's kind of made his way into the team recently. I've not watched a full game that he's played in yet, but Gallery started doing quite well. And it's these defenders that Livingston seem to constantly pluck out of nowhere. I think Boyce has been at the club maybe since the start of last season. It feels like he's been around for a while, but he's kind of started to break into the team. But I think Motherwell were good value for the point. Van Veen was in a one-man kind of mission to score a goal, and eventually did so. And they were maybe even unlucky not to win the game. He hit the bar. Thought it was a good chance, but you'll be able to tell me a bit more than that. But that was my view on it.
No, I thought Motherwell were unlucky to not get the win. And I think both managers were sort of aware of that post-match as well. And I really did feel for Stevie Hamill, because having Van Veen back, like obviously came off the bench against Ibrox and he wasn't exactly great. But I felt that was the first time I've seen him in a few weeks actually look like Kevin Van Veen, who does want to score goals, wants to get into the right positions. I think he has something like six shots, and he was linking up well. It's a great goal as well. It's a really nice finish. He's still got a lot to do. I thought Sean Goss was really good in the middle of the park as well, linking up. But I think over the piece, Motherwell were the better side, but like it's a terrible result for them at Tannadice. And that is sort of what makes the magnitude of just this draw even worse, because they're in a total relegation scrap now. And I don't know, unless Van Veen really starts to get firing again, I don't know where else it's really coming from. Because as much as I was really impressed by Sean Goss, I was impressed by Matt Penny as well. But that's no surprise, because I think he's been one of their better players throughout the season. But there's not a lot else creatively. I'm not Blair Spittle's biggest fan, but he was actually okay. But again, it's okay to create, but you're asking it. It's always is coming back to Kevin Van Veen to be the one scoring. So I think it was a real opportunity for Motherwell to pick up a well-needed win, and it slipped through the fingers. But for Livy as well, it was a very uncharacteristic Livy performance at home. I think it's been a wee while since they've totally made like the Tony Mac a proper fortress. They're really scrappy in the middle of the park, and I know they were obviously missing Holt and Pittman through suspensions rather. But yeah, there was just not like that. No, you sort of came to get used to that with Livy, that there's going to be, they're not always the most glamorous side to watch, but they know how to get the job done. And I just don't think there was any real sort of exhibition off that. So, yeah, I think it's definitely 2 points dropped for Motherwell. And, yeah, a worry for them in their relegation battle now, for sure.
I think it's like, Livy, you're used to them climbing the table a bit under the radar, but they're sort of slipping down the table under the radar at the moment. They're like, they're only 6 points ahead of Motherwell now as well. So it's at the middle, and we're going to talk about it with the remaining matches as well, but the middle of the table is really closing up now.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know that there was that slight sort of bid, could Livy be third? But I think that's signed, sealed and delivered for Hearts now as well.
We'll see. The defenders are dropping like flies. We'll see.
three games and one more goal to talk about, and we will move on to the one game which did have a goal and it very nearly didn't. And I notice I've gone all Sky Sports on my notes because I've got St Johnstone versus Dundee, but it's of course St Johnstone v Dundee United. I'll save that for the fact that as I was typing up the actual list of games, Tom came on the call and I started speaking to him. So maybe that's what happens on every single Sky Sports tweet. Someone just comes into the office just as they're about to write the word United. But I am aware it was Dundee United, and I certainly didn't actually misspeak on air. So I will chalk that one up as a victory. And a massive victory for Dundee United, who I think are probably turning a corner. I feel now probably the only thing that will potentially keep Dundee United down is Liam Fox. If he's not a very good manager, we don't know at the moment, but I think that they're just starting to show their wee bits of quality, and a really big win away from home from them. And they've started digging out those victories. And yeah, St Johnstone, on the other hand, have had a very poor festive period and are finding themselves again as everyone is sucked back down into the dregs.
I mean, there was a feeling a couple of weeks ago that, and despite the fact I really wanted Dundee United to sink without a trace, they have a lot of good players. Well, maybe not a lot, but they have enough good players who are much better than those around them. And if Liam Fox could find a way of arranging them in such a way as they were even just the sum of their parts, then they would potentially start picking up results. Whereas I kept looking at the league table and going, St. John's are sixth? I couldn't remember them putting together results. But so there maybe is a bit of a reversion to the level of ability that's available at the squad. I must admit, I didn't watch the highlights even of this. I watched the goal. It looked very much a team that maybe wanted it slightly more, and one team was quite happy to settle for a point and one team that was pushing forward for it. Tony Watt has not been a stellar signing for Dundee United. He's not really, I mean, he's never been especially prolific, but I think when he signed, there were a few question marks as to where he was going to play and how they were going to get the best out of him. Dundee United haven't had the best out of him yet, but it's a very, very big win for them, a very, very important 3 points. And it does kind of suck the teams immediately above them back into a playoff play, because it did look a couple of weeks ago, from my own selfish perspective, pleasingly like Dundee United were in danger of being cut adrift at the bottom. But they've fought their way back up.
It was drab. It was a really, really poor game up until the goal. Other than that, there's very, very little to write home about. But it's a huge win no matter what. It totally encapsulates one of those. No performance was needed, and it was just sheer points. Because I agree with Tom, it's sort of been like, where is this poor form from St Johnstone sort of came from, because prior to the break they were on an incredible run, and out of nowhere you were just like, this is all just sort of, you know, there was obviously nearly a point against Celtic, obviously defeated Rangers, but they were just sort of ticking away quietly in the background. But since the break that they've totally went downhill and not been able to sort of find any of or reignite that form. But I do think that they'll be fine because of that run. I think 5-6 games or something like that they went without a or they were on an unbeaten run of some sort. But for United, I don't know if they're turning a corner, but, you know, Tom's spot on again. The players that you look at, you're like, right, there's at least two real top quality defenders in there. They've got a strong enough midfield, and the attacking options that they have at their disposal should certainly be scoring enough goals to keep them in this division, because there is talent there, but it's just getting a tune out of them. And I'm not sure if Liam Fox has necessarily done that yet, but I think sooner enough these sort of players should be able to be taken into their own hands, as Tony Watt sort of did, and be able to grab something out of nowhere. I know they're sort of going through a bit of a flu influx right now as well. I think that's why Stephen Fletcher was out. So, because again, in recent weeks, I thought he's actually looked okay, and looked more, at least what you were sort of expecting to be getting from Stephen Fletcher. But if Tony Watt can sort of find where he was at a year to 18 months ago, because he's not hit the heights that he should have done at Dundee United, but here's hoping for their sake that he certainly can.
Yeah, well, we'll move on from that one, and we will normally on the Terrace podcast, we have a rule that 0-0 draws come last, but that's impossible here because we have two of them. So we will talk about your team first, Tom. We'll talk about Aberdeen 0, Ross County 0. You were up at Pittodrie yesterday, you told me. So it looked to me, watching it back, like Aberdeen were probably unfortunate not to win this game. Is that your perspective? Or
In terms of, at no point did I think Ross County were going to score. Kennedy has one off the line in the first half. If that goes in, it probably ends up being 3. Besajun has a really good chance late on that's cleared off the line, but the problem was not being able to make not being able to change the course of the game. Like there was no point where it was like, right, we're in third gear. We need to go through the gears. We need to get we need to put more pressure on. We need to do something slightly different. Ross County dealt with everything that was put into the box aerially. The only times that Aberdeen really got beyond and broke the lines was when they ran at them. So any time the Duke got the ball in space, any time Ramadani, who actually had a good game, Ramadani and Kennedy, whenever they kind of broke beyond from the midfield, they got a lot of space, and there was a bit of a mismatch, but there was never really a focal point to the attack. There was never any point where it was like wave after wave. And I think the most frustrating thing from these things happen, and it was completely dominant performance in terms of possession and chances and any measure that you want to have other than goals. The most frustrating thing from a fan's point of view is that, so Goodwin starts with a 4-2-3-1, which he said in the summer was kind of his favoured system. Now, he started the season with 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3, but kind of by default got this back three that was actually working, meant that we got more of our creative players on the pitch at once. That seemed to work. That seemed to be going all right until the Rangers game. It was going fine until the 93rd minute of that. And Stewart got sent off against St Mirren, so we were missing him for the Killie game. So there's a feeling that if we've kind of got that in our locker, we've got everyone back, why are we not going back to that? There is a reasonable enough argument that if you want to have against the bottom team in the league, Duke, Kennedy, Ramirez and Mayovsky all on the pitch together, then we'll try it. there was nothing wrong with the system. The problem is Ramirez is not a number 10. He didn't have a particularly bad game. He did everything that was asked of him. He put in a shift. He made a couple of tackles. But he was meant to be playing behind Majovski. And the number of times that McCrory or Coulson or Duke were getting to the byline, putting the ball across the goal, but it was going across like 12, 18 yards out. And you just wanted somebody, like somebody, a more natural number 10 to be sitting there. And we've got on the bench, we've got like, so Duke can play there, Clarkson can play there naturally, Kennedy can play there naturally, Barron can play there, Duncan can play there, Besejian can play there, a push, Johnny Hayes could play there. So when it wasn't working kind of 70 minutes in, the frustration's not that we don't change things. It's that we take off Ramirez, we take off Majovski, and ended up with no recognizable number nine on the pitch. Difficult to know what the formation is, difficult to know what the system was, and it being balls lumped into the box, really. And the only player that we had really that got on the end of anything was Ryan Duncan. So a lot of sterile possession, a lot of bad decision making. I mean, I don't think it's as I still think we've got probably the best 11 when everyone's fit outside the Old Firm. I still think we've got better players than Hearts. I think, like, if you were picking of those who are fit and available, but at the moment, Jim Goodwin has not managed to get them playing as a unit since the return of football after the World Cup. I don't think he's even had a game this season where he's made a game-changing decision. You know, there's been some very good performances, but when things aren't quite working, to change it. Now, I have no doubt that they'll go into the January window and sign a couple of players. The one thing that he has had and he has done well is work with the recruitment team to identify. I mean, nine of the starters were his players. The recruitment has been really good. But I don't know who it is. It's almost like the same sort of problem as Hibs have got, but with less of a panic about it. But the obvious, obviously, you could say we need a right back, but we only really need a right back if Ross McCrory is not the answer. He was fine, but he's not a natural right back. He needs to have a position. He needs to like be a regular in one particular position for the rest of his career. It's not at centre back. It might be in midfield. If it's a right back, he's all right at that, but he's a jack of all trades at the moment. If we're going to play with a back three, then we need another centre back, because every time we play Celtic, we can't use Scales. We're one suspension.
Have him. You can have him. Buy him.
I would be very happy. I mean, he's still quite raw, and he's still. I think he in a back three, we've got a problem with Stewart wants to just get rid of everything, and sometimes he's the one that needs to play football, whereas Scales is the one that's actually a footballer and doesn't always want to play that much football. But we don't have infinite resources, but we've got players on the bench that could theoretically change games, and we haven't found a way of getting them all into the same system. If we're going to be playing this kind of formation for the rest of the season, if we're going to be going back to what Goodwin said with a three or five, however you want to put it, in the middle, then we're going to need another midfielder. We're going to need somebody to be anchoring things, because Ramadani's very good, but he's still pretty young. He still doesn't know when to sit and when to go, and he's been clearly identified as the sitting player. I think he's a better all-round player than that, and I think we could probably do with an improvement alongside him, and maybe push Clarkson further up if he's not heading back to Liverpool. So, I mean, I don't think it's I don't think it's fundamentally broken, but it's been shocking since the return after the World Cup. There were a lot of boos at full time, and from the point that Kennedy missed, it did feel a bit like Ross County are very happy with the draw. They didn't push anyone on. They didn't, but you know, it was a very good point for them. But I don't know what ways we do in January that gives us the impetus for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, so that was a very good summary, and I don't think we really have the expertise to add anything else there, Tom. So we will move on to a subject I hopefully have a little bit more expertise on, which was Kilmarnock 0, St Mirren 0. this was not an interesting game at all. Obviously, I mean, Kelly will be hugely disappointed not to win the game, given that Ethan Erehon took leave of his senses a matter of minutes into the game. It was so weird because probably about a minute before he got sent off, he was kind of making a run at the midfield, and Christian Doidge, being a big lumbering lump, was just chasing back and kind of stumbled over the top of him, like a complete nothing incident. And Erehon like took real exception to him, got up and squared up to him and all the rest of it. And you kind of thought, that's really weird. And then about 60 seconds later, we had a throw-in, and I was watching the play, and you just heard this shout, and I turned around and the red card was out. And he'd obviously, I mean, McKenzie makes a lot of it, but nonetheless, he does very much put his elbow into him. And it is, to me, a red card, regardless of, you know, you don't have to hit someone hard in the face with your elbow.
No, I think it is, yeah.
And then from that point on, Kelly are obviously expecting to win the game and just didn't do quite enough. And that's the frustration, I think, as excluding the start of the season when it felt like we were finding our feet a little bit. I think in the last 12 games, it's 4 wins, 4 draws and 4 defeats. And that is not relegation form. That's boring 8th place finish form, which is, what Kelly are looking for. But that is a game where if we can win that game, you're really starting to pull away a bit, starting to set a marker down. Next 3 games are Celtic, Rangers and Celtic. One of them's a cup game, but you're not necessarily expecting much from that. So it would have been really good to pull away. And actually that would have put us in touching distance to top 6 as well. And to not create that many clear chances, Blair Alston had his shot, which was some really nice play in the first half. And then Doidge pulls out a wonderful save from Carson right at the end, which I thought was in personally. But that was the sum total of the clear chances Kelly created. And so it was a bit of a frustrating afternoon. At the same time, an enormous credit to St Mirren. I think they are the absolute worst team you could be playing against in that situation, because their back three are just all really, really good at defending. You can think back to the Celtic game where they beat Celtic earlier in the season. Gallagher, I think it was Gallagher, Fraser and Dunn that day as well, who were the back three, and they just would not let anything pass, and they got deeper and deeper. And sometimes when a team sits deep, it creates openings in front of them, but then they've got Bacchus screening in front of that, and that's very difficult to play against. And I think the important thing for that is that if you are sitting deep, you need a centre forward who keeps pressure on the defenders and doesn't, because if the defenders have got the time and the space, even at our level, if defenders have got time and space to pick things off, they'll eventually create something. But with Curtis Main, you're just not getting that moment's rest. And between all of that, Kelly were kind of, our defenders were constantly being forced, and our defenders aren't very good with the ball to begin with, so they're being forced to make mistakes, and therefore it was just really sloppy and we didn't get opportunities. The thing that annoyed me was we stopped just slinging balls into the box, because I think it's very reductive if you just keep crosses into the box, eventually something will fall when you've got an extra body. And we were trying to play through them a bit too much. Yeah, ultimately, Kelly didn't deserve to win the game, but would have hoped to win the game. But the problem is the same problem we've had all season long, which is the centre-forward position. Scott Robinson's brilliant to have back, and he's been one of my favourite players in the league for a while, and I'm glad he's now with us. But Doidge can't move. He won a lot of headers, as he did against Aberdeen the other night, so it's not that he's offering zero, but the return of Kyle Lafferty cannot come soon enough. We've signed Kyle Vassell, from, like, he's
chucked him through a door. Covered in wrapping paper.
But it wasn't, obviously, I don't know if clearance hadn't come through, because I think it may have been the type of player that we could have done with yesterday. But don't know what to expect from him. I've seen two wonder goals on, I searched his name on Twitter, as I do any time we sign a player I've never heard of, and found two wonder goals and him getting involved in a fight, which sounds like the sort of player he wants. So,
ideal signing.
But we didn't have him, but I think the forward situation needs to be sorted out. Honestly, to me, the more I watch some of these players, there's enough about them that I don't think there needs to be drastic changes. I think just one or two bits of quality in the window will be enough. And the one thing I like from this team is that there does appear to be a bit more of a spine to them. There's more. They're still not perfect, but compared to the team that got relegated, there seems to be a bit more of a kind of battling quality to them, and there is that instinct, or sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, yeah, there's a nastiness at times, and there's a kind of cleverness and all the rest of it. Personally, think we probably won't go down. I'm a bit more confident after watching certainly the last three games, especially the Aberdeen game, where that's it. I guess only every time we've got a home game, we're kind of expecting to win now, and we beat Aberdeen.
Because you're Hibs. So bad on the road.
Everyone's bad.
So
on the
bad.
Road. Everyone, exactly.
But we're only looking at, yeah, there's only 2 points we've won away from home, but hopefully that will start to change. And I do think we'll probably just win just enough games to pull away from it. But it would help if we were winning games like this for the opportunity was handed on a plate. St Mirren are in absolutely zero danger of getting relegated, and I think this could be their top six year, but you never say never with them, because they find a new and interesting way of not doing it. But yeah, they were really good. They've got a manager who's been there and done it lots of times. They've got good experienced players, and yeah, I was quite impressed with them yesterday. Yeah, and all that do is,
think,
yeah,
when taken out of sales, that's pretty much your your summary, because they were Kelly was, I had Kelly Aberdeen last week, and Kelly were so good in that first half. Like, that's easily the best I've seen them all season, so that, I guess, that's the frustration for yesterday.
Yeah, and it's the lack of consistency there, and there's not enough quality in the squad, and that's the biggest problem. I don't think there's a lack of desire. I think there's a massive lack of quality. But we're far from the only team where that is true in Scotland, I think. So hopefully that desire will be enough. Right, well, with that said, then we will go. We will leave you today. Thank you for joining me, Tom.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for joining me, Amy.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to all the listeners who are continuing to stick with the Terrace Podcast through yet another year. We will now be going over to record a Patreon episode where we're going to talk about our own personal New Year's resolutions for Scottish football, or football related, or things that, an inspired Patreon topic that took a lot of effort to think up. And we will, that's what your good hard-earned money is paying for. So please consider signing up if you haven't already. Patreon.com/terracepodcast, I think it is. I should know that. I don't. You'll find it. And if not, we will see you on Thursday for another episode of the Terrace Podcast. So thanks very much and goodbye. Sports Social Podcast Network.